This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
This is
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome. Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Today, we have another show about opera, but in this case, we bring an outstanding artist who has been representing the United States of America around the world since 1958. She has been a star at the Metropolitan Opera, but also in other great houses of the lyric arts around the globe. I am talking about Martina Arroyo, native of Harlem, New York, daughter of Demetrio Arroyo, originally from Puerto Rico, and Lucille Washington, originally from Charleston, South Carolina. She will talk to us about the hard work that her foundation is doing in polishing the best young talent of opera to raise to a new levels of excellence in the world of this difficult but beautiful art.
They have to just have talent. We are preparing right now Traviata and Il Barbiere di Siviglia, and those will be performed in 6 weeks with orchestra and costumes, a total performance. What they do in our class and what we do is to work the character, the personaggio, characters, emotions, and feelings, and the understanding of the words, the language.
Stay with us to learn more about this.
Let me tell you that it is a great pleasure to have you on the show. I know that it's going to be very motivational for a lot of people to listen to a very important voice in the world of culture and a great example of success in the world
Thank
of music
so much.
And culture.
It's my pleasure to be there, and I'm sorry I'm not with you personally rather than only by phone.
Well, yes, we are in each corner of the country. I wanted to start talking a little bit about you and your very incredible story. Your mom, she is also from United States, but your dad was, from United States, but in
Hispanic,
Puerto
yes,
Rico.
I'm this one mixture, yes.
Yes, and you grew up in Harlem.
Yes, I did. I grew up in Harlem first on 111th Street and then up 154th, both on St. Nicholas Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And my family lived close by, who were from the family from Puerto Rico. And we were very, very close, and still those that are still living is true close family, and that's beautiful.
So you had a bilingual childhood?
Well, I did, but my father insisted that everybody spoke English, and the only one who didn't speak English after 40 years was my aunt Regina, who could only say house. But she learned a few of the bad words from her sons, as usually happens.
Yeah.
But she never learned really to speak English, and she and my mother would speak to her in English and then part Spanish, some Spanish, and she would always stay in Spanish. They're the only one who didn't become really American.
Other times.
I love that. Was my favorite aunt, too.
Your first studies before you started to go into music were for Romance languages, actually.
That's right. I didn't major in music at Hunter College. I went to Hunter because of their opera workshop, But my parents, my mother and father, said, no, you have to have an education so that you can have a good life and, mm-hmm. and a good job. And they thought that singing opera was like doing a can-can dance. My father never did understand how I even became connected with opera. But when they said, we'll support everything that you do to have a good career, mm-hmm. but if you do the opera, it'll have to be on the side. And so that's how I did it, on the side, and it soon pretty quickly became my life.
Wow, until it turned out. But your mom, she was also a pianist, aficionado.
Oh, no, yes. My mother used to play by, she could play and heard. She was an amazing woman. She didn't know, she had never taken a lesson, mm-hmm. but she can sit down and play tunes, mm-hmm. but she was always repeating something, a melody that she had heard and knew, and she loved playing the piano, but mm-hmm. she was not trained, no. Oh,
so she had a great talent, but untrained.
Yes, and she also sang. When I sang well, she said I got the voice from her. When I sang badly, she said I got it from my father.
That's great. And then, I suppose then you took off a lot of, from her then, because then you grow up to be a very successful singer all around the world.
Well, yes, life has been wonderful, and I've been very, very fortunate. Because of that, I work with young people now, because I think that you should always try as hard as you can doing what you really care about, and you can succeed if you just keep working at it and don't give up.
Mm-hmm. And then I see at the beginning of your career, you also found, or people found, that you had a very special talent, and they were willing to support you and to tell you more and teach you more. So that's, I suppose, that's why I inspired you a little bit to do this right now.
Of course, we're going way back to when I was at Hunter College High School. And the opera workshop for the college, which were semi-professional singers, where they used to have their classes, and I would hear them from outside the door with my friends, and we would imitate them being devilish. And we got caught, and they made us sing for the director, who, instead of punishing me, said, would you like to be a singer? And I said, absolutely not. And he sent me to Mrs. Gurevich to study. Mrs. Gurevich, my teacher, said, no, she's only 14 and a half years old. She's not old enough to really study yet. But she took me on because he was insisting, and my parents, as I said, went along with it only if I continued and went to college. And a lady, a friend of my teacher, Mrs. Gurevich, was Mrs. von Kufner, who was a very wealthy lady who sent me to special coachings and extra lessons and was a part of my life all of the rest of her life. Which means that not only I had three mothers, I had my own mother, who was the dearest to me, as mm-hmm. well as the lady who was so wonderful, and my voice teacher. I had three mothers, mm-hmm. and that's pretty wonderful. She did take care of all of the extra expenses, which is very difficult, because nowadays it's hard to find someone who will take on an expense like that. Mm-hmm. But she believed, and thank goodness and thank God, it worked out.
And then you went to travel around the world singing.
How? Yes, but first I had to win the Metropolitan Opera auditions, which allowed me to sing at the Met in a very small part and then go around the world. And people said, but she's from the Met, so she must be good, which isn't always the case. But nevertheless, it helped me a great deal mm-hmm. to have sung there already. And I sang in the major houses like Vienna and Frankfurt, and it all began, and soon Paris and Scala and London, and wow. Of course many years passed as this was happening.
And then you were the first Latina to get the Kennedy Prize?
Yes, I don't call myself a Latina.
Yeah.
I'm a mixture, but I don't, I'm as black as I am Latin, and what I am is a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm a woman that wants to attract other young people into this career and do as much as I can. And I don't in any way deny one or the other. But, for example, right. what I still remember in Spanish is tengo hambre, dame dinero. You know, that's not very much anymore. Not true. I can understand when I'm in the environment. But I go immediately to Italian because that's what I've been singing in for 30, 40 years.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if you don't practice
it. But it's hard to say I'm only a... I eat Latina, if that means anything. But I don't like using either one word or the other when, in fact, I'm both.
Thank you.
Belong is an organization that helps mobilize individuals for volunteering and educational opportunities designed to advance international development efforts and promote cross-cultural understanding. Participants have the choice of 1 week to 6 months immersion placement in Latin America or Asia, or 2 week expeditions to learn about international development issues. For more information, visit youbelong.org. That's UBELONG.org.
And today, our guest is Martina Arroyo, an American legend of opera from the Martina Arroyo Foundation.
So your foundation, it helps new talent to grow up
exactly.
into opera.
And they don't have to be Latin or Black. They have to just have talent. And we are preparing right now Traviata and La Barbiere di Siviglia. Mm-hmm. And those will be performed in 6 weeks with orchestra and costumes, a total performance. And what they do in our class and what we do is to work the character, the personaggio, the character's emotions and feelings and the understanding of the words and the language, and they work the vocal part with their own voice teachers, and together we put on the performance.
You got one local talent, she was local for a while here from the Bay Area, Cecilia.
Cecilia, yes, she's our Traviata.
Yes.
Yes, she's beautiful. And you know what's so wonderful about Cecilia is that she immediately grasps the character's emotion, and she gives of herself so much. And she's singing beautifully. She studies with Diana Silveiro, who came and spoke to us last week, mm-hmm. who spoke as in a master class and was wonderfully informative, and the kids really were involved with that. And we were happy to know that Cecilia studied with her, but Cecilia is a lovely, lovely exponent of these arts. She's a beautiful singer, but more than that, she's a lovely, lovely woman. I'm using the word lovely a lot because it describes really her lovely personality, her giving, her charm, mm-hmm. All of it, and her talent. She's just one of the best we've had.
What is more important, the training that you give in the singing part or in the acting part or putting it all together?
We do the acting part. We don't do very much training in the vocal part. They do that with their teachers, which is why I mentioned the fact that Diana Silveiro, who's her teacher, was here. Mm-hmm. We stay in contact with the teachers very much because... Mm-hmm. Since we don't work voice, we have to work the characters, you know, how they color the words, and how they say them, what they mean. They have to know very, very much who the character is and who they were before the opera began, so that what you get is a complete characterization. You know, you get a complete person. You just don't get someone who's singing and not involved personally in how what they're saying and what's happening to them in this their life, which is another... They're portraying another character. They're living in that person's skin for those hours. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, yes, it does. It does.
Oh, good, because sometimes I think that people think you just stand and sing.
Oh, no.
If you don't believe Madame Butterfly and believe what she's going through, and she doesn't know what she's going through, then there's no exchange of artistry.
Yeah, opera is passion.
That person knows... and how she wants to say something is as convincing as she says it. The audience receives not only voice, but they also receive the character, the whole being, and you're much more connected.
Of course. Yes, so opera is just full of passion. Without it, there is nothing.
Oh, yes. But you have to know why you have that passion, what it is that brought you to say those words. How did you get into this situation? Where did you come from? Mm-hmm. And that you don't necessarily to say to the audience, you know, I didn't have parents who loved me, but how you are, you know. Mm-hmm. And therefore they'll understand a lot of how you are because you show us as the singer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Cecilia used to tell us that at the beginning she didn't get any acting classes, and then she used to say that my only acting experience is watching a lot of telenovelas and getting the passion from there.
Yes. But, you know, she has a natural instinct, too. That's very important that people, the young people, are willing to go and delve into this part of it and learn. It takes more time than you think, because in order to not only know who you are, but also the language well enough to express the meaning of the words and in that language, that's time-consuming. Yeah. It's much harder than just standing up and singing notes and not knowing what you're saying and not caring.
Mm-hmm.
That this is much more involved and much more takes much more energy.
Yeah.
And much more of your life. But you're so much. You have so much more to give when you've done this work.
Is it the world of opera today a little bit more easier for minorities, or is exactly the same? Is colorblind, or is tougher?
I don't know if you can say it's easier, but there's certainly been many openings. The color line has been broken, not only the color line, but also the national. There are many, many Asian people. There are many, many people from mixed cultures and other parts of the world that you don't even think of. We have in our class, for example, people from South Africa. We have them from all over. Mm-hmm. But when they come there, they're the characters that they're portraying, and we become friends,
mm-hmm.
and we're working together. That is another, and I think that the opera world for us is no problem. We work together without any issue at all.
Well, what's it
now? Whether we're hired fairly in the many opera houses of the world, I don't want to just give a blank answer, because I'm sure these people, there are more of us working around the world than there were 50 years ago, but there are also more people of color and of different ethnic groups who are saying, yes, I can do this because I will have a job, so I'll put the effort into it, whereas maybe mm-hmm. 60 years ago, an Asian girl or a black girl or someone from a different religion might not want to try it because they think they wouldn't have a chance.
Yeah.
But now I think that what's good is that people say, I have a chance. I can go for this.
And you got a lot of chances. Was it difficult?
Well, I wouldn't say it. Once you get the contract, it's not difficult. You must either do well mm-hmm. or not do well, and people either like you or they don't. But I don't know if my agent had a hard time. I'm sure she had to do a lot of beating down on doors to get contracts for me 40 or 50 years ago. But I think that there'll always be, now they're talking about you must be pretty and thin. So I think that, you know, if I were singing now, nobody'd give me a job because I was not thin and certainly not all that pretty. But I think those are superficial things. If you've got the talent and the voice and the, or whatever it is, you can dance or you can act, if you can do that properly and wear that other skin, people have to say, yes, I accept it, I believe you.
And the change about the being thin and pretty is because now the Met is also offering videos with the operas.
I don't know if you can put it all on the Met. I know that that's one of the gossips. But remember, now that we have television, we've had movies and theater, people go right into your face. They come up close to you. It's no longer a distance. You don't look at the character from a distance. Even though opera was sung in the streets
mm-hmm.
Of Italy and other countries, you know, but people were more interested in your voice. Now they're saying not only you have to voice, but you have to be able to act and look the part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're demanding more and more as time goes on. But I wouldn't blame only the Met, even mm-hmm. though I think that if a beautiful instrument and a beautiful artist were to come to the Met, I don't think the people would let them not be heard, because I think the people still want to hear the best they can.
And is it the same in other countries and around the world?
You mean about being thin?
Yes.
Oh, darling, I haven't sung in so many years. I don't have a feeling for that, but I know that they're doing many productions around the world that are a little bit stranger in that they're doing productions of people nude. And if you're nude, you don't want to be...
Yeah.
Ugly and new to the eye, but, you know. But I don't know if I can give you answers about how people in management and in the opera, ones that are actually putting these operas together, I don't know if they sit down and say, we have a discussion about how they look as well as how they sing. I still think that performing is the major part of it, with a lot of emphasis now on looks. I think the people will always accept the ones, the voices, because it's subjective, that they like, the people, the singers that they like and love, and not care if you are 10 pounds more or less. I believe that. I think I have to believe that.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this. And today, our guest is Martina Arroyo, an American legend of opera from the Martina Arroyo Foundation.
How difficult it is to be successful or to have a career in the world of opera, because not every city has a major opera company, and I suppose there are a lot of people who want to do it.
You're not only judged by the sound that you make and the movements and all those other things we talked about that you make, but how many places there are available, what management do you have, if you have any, to get out and work for you to get your jobs. It's a very difficult career, and it's so hard to say to talented people you might not have a career. Imagine how many people are out there that are not so talented that are still trying for their career because they believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like if you have a skill you can do it. You will find a place that can do it. It's more than that. It's subjective. You're subjected to so much more than just having a voice.
Do you see any space for Spanish opera and zarzuelas?
Love Spanish opera and zarzuela. Are you kidding? Some of the most beautiful music ever written.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do see space. I see the necessity, as I'm seeing time now for Russian operas and Czech operas and operas that 50 years ago maybe one or two came through. But it also has been helpful that we've had Caballé and Grom Domingo and Jaime Aragal and different Spanish singers sing this music for people to hear. Now, if you go to a recital of these people, they're bound to be Spanish songs. I always sing Obradores and Nin and different composers in Spanish in the recitals. It's getting it out there.
In the U.S., you hear a lot about the typical Italian operas, maybe even Mozart, but they don't move too much outside of that very known or comfort zone, as you say. No Russian, no Spanish, it's not that common.
No, but it is becoming more and more. You have to go and look for it. It's not always being presented, except in a bigger house that can afford to put on some of those operas to find the singers that can sing in Russian and Czech. And so you go to the place like the Met, maybe, but you'll find some glorious productions in smaller cities. Of course, in Los Angeles, you've got a glorious opera there. You've got a wonderful opera house that does all kinds of things. But the opera house also has to pay its bills.
Mm-hmm.
So they perform what they think people will come to, and little by little bring in newer, bring in American, bring in modern, present-day music, which isn't always my taste, but that's not the point. It should not be not heard. We have to put it out there for people to say, yes, I like it or not. Mm-hmm. Remember when Traviata made its debut and people didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot assume that you have overnight success with operas or any kind of literature. It takes time, very often.
So, and the life of an opera singer is always moving around the world, never staying...
if you're lucky.
Many years.
Some don't.
Okay. So you go from one contract, like people don't really get hired to be in New York for 20 years. They get hired for 2 or 3 years and they move around?
In 1 year, I might have gone to Paris, London, New York, Buenos Aires, Vienna, all in 1 year, maybe. And then sometimes, but you stay for a period of time in these places to do a production. But lives are different. Sometimes if you're on a concert tour, you might go to a different place every few nights for the sake of doing the recital. It's very different for then singing in the opera, but opera singers sing recitals as well. You sing with orchestras. You might stay 1 week in one place because you've got four performances of the Verdi Requiem or whatever it might be. So, you know, there are different forms of music. The same singers very often, all of us try to sing many styles. There's chamber music with voice and instruments. You know, there's orchestral music with voice and instruments. And I'm saying this, I know you know it, but it allows you to have a varied career. You don't have to either travel all the time or stay in one place all the time. You can pattern out your life, your own life. If you're lucky.
Good, as you were.
Yes.
Great.
And I'm very grateful for that. And I wish that every singer with whom I work and every singer that I've... And I hear so many talented people, you know. I look at Cecilia and I think, she's got to have a great life with this talent. And all you can do is hope and try to do something to help. There's no guarantee.
The B612 Foundation is a non-profit organization that aims to build, launch, and operate the first privately funded deep space mission. It is a space telescope to be placed in orbit around the Sun. The telescope will be used to map our inner solar system to better track the trajectories of Earth-crossing asteroids. The goal is to reduce the risk of a catastrophic collision. If you'd like to learn more or contribute to this effort, visit them at b612foundation.org.
Today, we're talking with opera star, spin soprano Martina Arroyo. The topic, her foundation, and how they help youth to improve their skills in opera and at the same time preserve this art.
What would you say to young people out there that think that maybe in the future they might have a career in classical music and in opera?
I tell them, work for that career. Just go for it. Mm-hmm. Do what you have to do to be the best singer you can.
Mm-hmm. And study a lot.
You study for the rest of your life. You never stop studying because you're doing new things. You're doing old things new. You're doing old things for the first time. You have no time to stop studying.
New style of opera, as you say, there are some people that are trying to do the new...
Some of the American operas that have been written in the past 30 years are not necessarily in a style of Mozart, but there's modern music that is not as tonal, let's put it that way, as Mozart or Verdi or Puccini, but it's still music. And you have to bring the same things to it. You have to bring the character and the meaning of the words and act the part and to present to the audience the final piece. Mm-hmm. And there are many new different styles out there. There was a time when you had to have an orchestra of a particular size. Now there are operas with 10-piece orchestras or with just a drum and a small band or whatever it is in different parts of the world. I just heard a piece recently at the Philharmonic, or rather it was a broadcast. It was Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, and instruments from South America that was absolutely fascinating, and the orchestra, fascinating, mm-hmm. fascinating, and totally a total different sound and a totally new sound to a piece presented by a major concert orchestra.
Oh, yeah, but and JJMA is very well received for the public. Maybe the rest of the new trends are not as easier to get to the big opera
Never,
houses.
But that you just have to be repeated here and here again. Many things that you don't like or you think you don't like the first time has to do with becoming accustomed to it and learning more about it. As I said, Traviata was not a hit the first time it went out. Yet, so now it's one of the favorite operas in the repertoire.
What are the programs that your foundation offers to young artists?
Well, the performance is the main thing, that the performances, but the study, with the study of the character and the languages, we work individually. We have 21 people on staff. They work with coaches. They work with combat. They work with a stage director. They work with the conductors. They work with people who only work in recitatives in those operas that have them. They work with languages as well. They and individual classes as well as the big rehearsals for the performance. So they work from 10 in the morning. I say work from 10 in the morning until 6, and very often in the evening they have master classes with famous people who come and talk about their careers and developing a character. Mm-hmm. So it's a very hard 6 weeks, but they're already showing that they're enjoying and giving everything they've got, mm-hmm. and that's always encouraging because that's what they're going to have to do for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And how do you choose your talent every 6 weeks?
Not every 6 weeks. We listen to people in December, January, and February, mm-hmm. and from sometimes 400 people or 450 people. We find the voices that we think would be the best ones for these operas, the two operas that we're doing, whatever. It's, as I said, this year we have the Traviata and the Barbiere, but last year we had two other operas the year before that. We always vary the operas and change them, but always with an opera with recitative, because mm-hmm. recitative is so important for us to learn, and to learn how to not only to sing, but to perform on stage. And we make sure that the person is right for that particular part. Like every soprano cannot sing Traviata. That and every tenor, that you have different types of tenors and different types of sopranos. So sometimes we can't accept someone that we like simply because they wouldn't work in that particular opera. Mm-hmm. But we listen, we remember, so that when we're doing that kind of opera, we make sure that we contact them and saying, would you be interested?
Mm-hmm. And then I see that you have two types of preparation, what you call prelude and what you call the role class.
Prelude is the six-week program when at the end of the program we have the performances with orchestra, costumes. It's a full opera, mm-hmm. Complete with all of the cast. The role class is where someone, probably younger, who would learn a role and little by little sing it in the class. They don't have the other members of the cast necessarily. They might be the only one studying in that opera, but they think through, learn, translate, because it's important that you know exactly what the words mean and the idioms of that language, and translate and act through the entire role. It's slower, it's longer, and usually, very often, it's a younger person or someone who wants to do that role for the first time. Mm-hmm. But there's no performance at the end, and you don't have a complete cast.
Mm-hmm. All this is a non-profit organization that is held by the National Endowment for the Arts.
Well, the endowment has certainly given us money each year, but we also get funds from other organizations like the State Arts Council and the city, and private donations. We're always looking for private donations. It's mm-hmm. part of our... I think the arts in general is always looking for funding, and our program, because we go out and we seek funding. If anyone wants to contribute, please do.
Oh, yes.
These are such worthwhile young singers. They are so ready to be ready to perform and be your opera stars of tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
And some of them even today.
Perfect. And all your links are in our website right now. So
that's right.
People can go and to our show
Royal
and
Foundation,
find the links,
yes,
to yours.
Or the Prelude to Performance, you'll find us.
Yes. You do this during the whole year. You're always preparing for the next cast, the next opera, the next people to come.
Either preparing through auditions or in the process of doing the role class, which is 12 weeks in the beginning of the year, or in the prelude, which is in the summer. But mm-hmm. the foundation is working all year for this, yes.
Do the artists go to you, or you have people scouting around and recommending you where to look for?
We have all kind. We have major auditions where people come to New York and sing for us in person. Then we have people who sometimes, when we're traveling around ourselves, or Mark Rucker, who's our administrative director, is singing himself in the place or visiting, the arrangements will be made for us to hear people in that place, or for him to hear people. We've also gone to Boston to hear people. If someone cannot get to New York, we advise, if they send us a tape, that should we like them on the tape, that they eventually make the trip to New York, because we want to hear everybody in person.
Yes.
That we choose for the programs.
Yes.
Now, we have people who come from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't necessarily, a few come in to audition, but many send a tape, and we make first contact that way.
The tape is never enough to really know how they really sound, or how,
well,
do you feel?
Well, no, it's enough to get us interested often. But when it's, but you know, you have to be careful that, after all, a tape is electronically done.
Yeah.
We would like to not only hear the person, but to see them and see how they perform themselves and what they have by nature or what they've learned so far. But we don't turn anyone down. And also, when I'm traveling, I'll hear people, or when I'm doing classes outside of the city, I do hear people then. And we're always listening for people to be in our prelude.
You found people that already have started their career. They're already out there. But then they need the next step. So they already
And also some who simply want to learn a new role and learn it thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people who have been singing with smaller companies, or with companies who still say, but I'd like to learn, I'd like to really work on this role.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll come into the role class, or they'll audition if it's a part they've sung even. Sometimes they'll come in and say, I want to learn it thoroughly.
And after they get through your program, other people notice them, and other people, they go off to a even better career, I suppose.
We hope so. That's what we are aiming for. Many people come to the performances, and many people in managerial positions, and we get reviews from the New York Times and big papers and small papers, but we're hoping that that's all publicity for them.
Mm-hmm. And what is the percentage of inside and outside the country, people who actually travel all the way?
Many more from within the United States, of course, and, mm-hmm. and even more, in a sense, from the tri-state area, New York. But we have people right now, two young men from South Africa. We've had from England. We've had from Switzerland. We've had people coming from that hear about us, and some of them come and audition. As I said, some of them will send a tape. Sometimes we're traveling around in different places, and we hear them that way. But it's not considered just a national group. It's not just national for Americans only, by no means.
Thank you for listening to Atenea Americana, your house of culture in the radio and online. In this bilingual show, I bring you every week 1 hour in English and 1 hour in Spanish, opening a window to the cultural Hispanic world. You can hear in the intro and at the final of the show, as well as right now, music from the legend of Latin jazz, Oscar Hernandez. This and all my shows are in StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org, where I wait for your comments. I invite you to be part of this.
And do you get any support internationally? Not yet.
Not yet, but please, from your mouth to God's ears. Please do. As I said, we have always been fortunate in that we do get some private contributions sometimes from people abroad, but mainly people who've been here and hear about us and then make a contribution. We haven't gotten a contribution from an organization mm-hmm. that's from another country yet.
Great. And but people, after they're done with your program, they do travel to other countries and bring your name.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And some of them, as a matter of fact, they not only sing at the Met, because we have several people at the Met, but they travel. I think Noah Stewart is in London at Covent Garden. Speedo Green is going to be in Vienna next season. I mean, they're moving around all over Germany. You know, people you might not necessarily hear about easily, but they're singing and performing in good houses. Not because of us. I don't want to make it sound like we sent them there. We're just one part of their career, a small part maybe. I don't know how you think of it, but a part of a lot of people's efforts to put into an artist.
Germany is a big center of the opera world, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, they also produce.
And it's not like a place like La Scala, the Met, or Buenos Aires, or Covent Garden, but there are many houses in Germany that do fabulous performances all through the country.
Yeah, I heard that a lot of singers also want to learn German because it's where there is a lot of work over there.
Well, you know, we have to be careful about the words we use, like a lot of work or mm-hmm. things like that. I think that the arts needs our help and our attention more than ever because, you know, I think that we cannot live without music. I promise you that we have to have music somehow in our lives. But we also have to support it. And many of the countries that used to be government subsidized are losing some of their subsidy. Mm-hmm. And we never had a real subsidy, but people are donating and contributing to the arts. We have to keep that campaign going so that it's so that people are constantly reminded that we have to be helped mm-hmm. and that the young talent has to be helped. We cannot be. It's not just the opera; it's the dance. It's all of the art forms, and we're all asking the same people to enjoy us and to help us.
That's part why it's so steady in many countries in Europe, because it's actually supported by the government as part of
and
their
has
cultural
been for
programs.
More than 100 years, and we're just getting it going here.
Yeah, that's right, also. It's part of their history. It's Definitely. Inside there.
But we have a wonderful history going, too, huh?
Yes, we do. Ever-changing. Easier to change than theirs.
Well, I don't know if you could... generalities are a little bit hard for me to handle. I always find that the moment I say something that sounds very general, I think of the exception to the rule.
Yes, and I suppose opera is about legacy and traditions too.
Oh,
not all about change.
It's a portrayal of our lives, isn't it, usually?
Yes, it is. Do you normally, you know, what operas are you going to be presenting in the next years? You have a program that...
Yes, we have a five-year plan, but I'd rather not announce it until it's officially announced, but we do stay ahead 5 years.
Oh,
because
great.
We are always looking... it's very difficult. We have maestri that have been that have to wait 2 years before they're free. Mm. Conductors that are truly, we have this year Daniel Lipton, and next year we're supposed and Willie Waters, our general director of music, and we also have next year we think Richard Bonning, who's agreed to do Don Pasquale, but we not it's not set in stone.
Yeah.
But we have people who help us that are really in the arts and booked for years ahead. Mm. So, and we're a program. We're very fortunate that these people care about us and do come and work with us. But we have to be patient because they're having their careers too.
Yeah. When you put the whole show, the whole production, you start with the money from the foundation, or you actually depend on people going out and buying the tickets?
Well, it's important that people buy the tickets, but it's important that people come and see what the young people, the young artists are doing, that to know what's coming ahead in the future. But of course, we like the idea that they're paying a very small amount, but nevertheless, it does help. But the major contributions come from foundations or big contributions by individuals that can afford to write a check to us or to any arts organization.
Have you been thinking in another kind of outreach to people other than, well, I know that the whole foundation is about outreaching new people, but you go to schools and...
Yes, of course we send singers into the schools. Mm-hmm. We have to because it's a part of the future that these young people also know about opera and classical music and it not be strange to them but become a part of their palette, their musical palette. You should start early. It's not something you start later in life. If you can, they should be hearing all of this music. They should hear Paquito de Rivera as well as Kiri Takanawa.
It has been very enlightening, and I hope that a lot of people get inspired. Do you have any message that you want to give to the youth and all the future talents that might be around?
What I would say is what my parents said to me about life generally. If you feel that you have something to offer, develop it. Don't give up. Don't let go. Keep working, and people cannot discriminate against anything that is truly well done. You know, they don't think in terms of being held back. Move ahead and make people move with you. You know, it's important that you know that you're probably just the person, next person we're waiting to hear from or to make our favorite talent. Don't be discouraged. It's hard work. I think I would say probably with all of these young people here, from all of their teachers, from all of their parents, and maybe some of them not. We know that not everybody is encouraged and has been as lucky as I feel I've been.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to still keep moving and have a life that you'll be proud to be living and that you'll be happy in that life.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It has been an honor talking to you. And we'll...
My pleasure. I wish I could speak with you all personally.
Oh, sure. One day we'll do.
I'd like that.
So, and I'll put all the information in our website so people can reach out and learn more about you.
Today we're talking with Martina Arroyo about her foundation, Martina Arroyo Foundation. They give free training to young talented singers who want to deepen their knowledge in opera. This is a non-profit organization endorsed by the National Endowment of the Arts, but also by private donors that help preserve the arts. You may learn more about them at our page, StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org, but also going to their website, MartinaArroyoFBN.org. And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Stanford, 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
This is
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual House of Culture, on the air and online.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para Radio 90.1 KCSU, Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
Remember to come back soon. We'll be here.
Ciao.
See you later.